Hey everybody, it's Joe Rogan, and this is my podcast, and this is the new way I'm going to do my commercial now, because I can't keep saying it the same fucking way.
But it turns the regular way halfway through it.
Somewhere along the line, I give up. I always give up. Our podcast is sponsored by Onnit, which is essentially a vitamin supplement and fitness company. It's a company that I am a part of. I own a part of the company. The reason being that I got involved in it, and I believe in the ethics of the company, and I believe what they're selling. They're selling the best quality nutrients. Some of them are nootropics. Some of them are sports exercise ones like Shroom Tech Sport. Alpha Brain is the famous nootropic one. We also sell hemp protein powder with maca and raw cocoa. It's fucking fantastic stuff. Kettlebells and battle ropes. It's all essentially fitness and like lifestyle and health supplements. And it's all stuff that I believe in. It's all stuff that I've always been taking, like, long before I ever got involved in this company. So if you're interested in it, if you're interested in nootropics, a very controversial area, I want you to go to Google and just Google the word nootropics, N-O-O-T-R-O-P-I-C. It's all about supplementation to enhance your brain's ability to produce neurotransmitters. It's all very complicated stuff. A retard like me should not be really talking about it because I don't really know what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying? I'm just like repeating scientific shit that I've read.
But I believe that if you believe in it, I actually would take that to heart because you actually don't really – I mean, I don't know your finances, but you don't seem like you need a lot of money. You were on a network. You were hosted a network TV show for a lot of years. You were a star of talk radio, news radio, and everything.
Well, I'm also an idiot. I could have spent that money. I could have burnt right through that shit.
He's got gold Buddhas.
I would never get involved with anything that I don't believe in. I just wouldn't. I don't have another life to live. I've got one. And while I'm already ahead, and I'm not worried about paying my bills and everything's going well. The last thing I'd ever do is get involved in anything that I didn't really. That's not true though, because I did do Fear Factor again for another term. But I really like those guys that I worked with. And I would be sick if I saw somebody else doing it. I really would have. That, even though that show was retarded, that was my baby.
Yeah.
I did 148 of those fucking things.
Jeez.
There's no way I would be involved in a company unless I believed in it. And everything that we sell it on it is all stuff that I use in my daily life that I've talked about long before I got involved in this company, especially kettlebells, which I feel are the best as far as like strength and conditioning. If I had to pick one exercise, I think kettlebells is like the best piece of exercise equipment that you can have. It's like a cannonball that's got a handle on it, and it's all about controlling this fucking cannonball, and they come in a bunch of different sizes. I use sometimes as light as 35 pounds, sometimes 50 pounds, sometimes 70 pounds, and they give you amazing workouts that directly apply to jiu-jitsu for me. But for any athletic endeavor where it relies on explosiveness and muscle power, and it's all exercises that make your body move as one complete unit. As opposed to like isolation exercises, which a lot of people do at the gym when you see them lifting weights, this is something where your entire body, like there's things called Turkish get-ups, where you hold this weight up, you're lying on your back, and then you slowly and controlledly stand all the way up to your feet and then bring it all the way back down. It's a really odd thing you would think, but it's really applicable for like strength and fitness in real world athletic pursuits and even just for picking shit up, and even if just for having a strong body. It's better to have a strong body than a weak-ass bitch body. There, I said it. All right.
Unless you date like girls that are like bisexual, they tend to like the bitch body look.
Do they really like that? Bisexual, they like a guy that's not guy-like?
Right.
That's too much of a gamble,
though.
That's
my secret.
Yeah, gee, you're going to gamble for a niche market? I'd say you could probably get them anyway if you bulked up.
Yeah. I don't know.
Anyway, of supplements, go to Onnit.com, use the code name Rogan, and you will save 10% off any and all the supplements. The kettlebells and the battle ropes, that shit does not work on. We sell them as cheap as we can, and they're, you know, especially with the kettlebells, it's very difficult. It's like you're sending cannonballs through the mail. But they're as durable as fuck, and they'll be here forever. All right, that's it. Mike Birbiglia is here. Mike Birbiglia.
The Joe.
He's in the fucking house.
Experience.
Train by day, Joe Rogan podcast by night, all day.
Sorry, these commercials are brutal.
is interesting to me, though. It's like something that I've never investigated. I've always just kept at arm's distance that kind of the nutrients and the vitamins and things like that. I've just, I don't understand it. I'm not going to go near it. But you, and I've listened and watched this podcast, you seem to know a good bit about it.
Well, I know from my personal experience, it makes a big difference for me what I eat. If I really concentrate on, like, the most important thing, I think, is nutrients from food. That's the most important thing. You got to eat healthy food. And then supplementation on top of that. But you have to have the actual nutrients.
So what do you eat for lunch today?
This morning I had a hemp protein shake. I only ate once. I just had a hemp protein shake with a banana, coconut oil, and
I had two cigarettes
and
Starbucks.
Coconut water. Yeah, no, I don't eat heavy in the mornings. I eat really light in the morning. I usually just have a shake or have a kale shake. That's my most common thing that I have. If I'm lazy or if I'm running out the door, I don't have time to make it. But it takes a few minutes to make. I have to clean the kale and clean celery and clean cucumbers. And then I take chunks of ginger and raw garlic. And there's a thing called what is the name of the blender? It's this badass blender, but it's specifically designed for this purpose.
Yeah.
It's got like a plunger and you shove everything in there.
Vitamix.
Is that it? Vitamix, yes. That is it. Thank you. And it fucking whips it down to like a drinkable consistency. And I put like pineapple in it to make it taste good. And it's fucking great, man. It doesn't taste that good, but for your body, it's great. You know, it gives you just like this charge of like good stuff. It's like your body knows it's got all these nutrients to work with.
But isn't there an inherent contradiction with, because I know that you do the Ultimate Fighting stuff.
Yeah.
Is that what it is? Is that what it's called? Ultimate Fighting?
Yeah, it's called the Ultimate Fighting Championship.
But that seems to be people murdering people, like other people slamming on you and making it so that your health is no longer a possibility.
You can look at it that way, and that is certainly part of it, but what it also is competition in the highest and most dramatic form that a human being can see, other than war.
Right, the way the Olympics is. I mean, it's not that healthiest thing to be an Olympic gymnast.
Yeah, maybe, but this is even worse because this is another person dominating you.
Yeah.
You know, the idea of losing in gymnastics is, you know, I'm sure a cruel bitch after years and years of practice and you slip when you land.
Yeah.
But it's nothing like getting your ass kicked.
Yeah.
There's nothing like getting just the fuck beat out of you in front of the world.
Yeah.
And there's the emotions that are involved in that of control. The place to look is to look at the very, very best guys.
Yeah.
If you look at the very, like the guys like Anderson Silva, you know, he's this insanely good fighter. Insanely good, but such a nice guy.
Yeah.
Like a sweetheart of a guy. Always laughing and always joking. He's just controlled all of his demons and all of his bullshit with like the most intense form of competition physically available.
That
so
makes
it's,
sense.
There's a lot going on that people don't see. They see people just kicking people's asses. It's not just that. There's a whole side to like the cure.
We are. I'm not even kidding. I swear, when I say I'm from Shrewsbury, people say you're from where Spags is.
I think there was a gig there. I think that's why I'm remembering it. I think it was one of those Boston comedy gigs. Did you ever work for Boston Comedy?
Oh, yeah.
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 They
for
send
sure.
you out on
Well, there was an Aku Aku in Worcester.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
I grew up driving by the Aku Aku where it would say comedy night. And
yeah, was that a Knicks little comedy stop?
Yeah.
Is it still a Knicks comedy stop?
I don't know, actually.
And then there's Giggles out there in Saugus. That's Mike Clark's.
Oh, I never did that. I
like
Mike Clark.
Great pizza place.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Pizza's great. And it's right next
Massachusetts
door.
Massachusetts pizza is very underrated.
Very underrated.
It's Greek pizza. It's good.
Giggles was a great gig. Mike Clark is Lenny Clark's brother.
Yeah, I know.
And fucking great guy.
Nice guy, yeah.
Oh, he's the best.
But we had, in my town, Shrewsbury, very small town, I had four pizzerias within a half mile. Shrewsbury Pizzeria, Village Pizzeria, Dean Park, and White City.
I thought that Massachusetts pizza was really good until I moved back to New York. And then I just realized there's a few places like in Yonkers.
Yeah.
There's a place in White Plains called Nicky's Pizzeria.
Yeah.
They have a white pizza that is so fucking good.
I gotta try that.
It's like,
that.
How come they can't make this anywhere else? Like, why is this not in California?
In my movie Sleepwalk With Me, there's a pizza pillow. There's a pillow made of pizza. as a prop, and it was done by Roberta's, which is in Brooklyn and is fantastic. Check out Roberta's if you can.
Yeah, there's some like legit old school New York pizzerias that just can't be fucked with. They're artisans.
Arturo's on Houston's like that.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of them, man. Yeah. There's a lot of them.
There was a John's place, is like that.
I just remember a place in Yonkers. I don't even remember the name of it, but my friend used to know, like, the. It was like his buddy's dad ran it for, you know, 100 years. And it just was ridiculously good, thin crust pizza. It was like, this is just some weird place. Like, you look on the outside, this is right. If everybody knew about this, there'd be a fucking mile-long line. I mean, you go to that Pink's Hot Dogs. Isn't that the craziest thing you've ever seen?
Yeah.
Because they cook the hot dogs at night, or outside, rather. It's just this giant line of people who are basically waiting to get a very mediocre hot dog.
Yeah.
But this pizza is just...
I love that phrase. If everybody knew about this. that's like the thing that they say in advertising rooms. Like, if we could just get everyone to know about this.
There's some shit like that that just sneaks through. Like, we all know comics like that, that have just snuck through.
Oh, yeah. If everybody knew...
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, for I mean, who,
do you know
who
Brian Holtzman?
No.
Brian Holtzman, for sure. No doubt.
Brian Holtzman.
Brian Holtzman has made me laugh harder saying inappropriate, ridiculously inappropriate shit than anyone.
Well, that's how I feel. I mean, it's,
Brody.
I'm talking about Brody.
Brody's starting to get a little famous, though.
Yeah.
A lot of people know Brody now.
I'm talking about someone pretty famous, but I feel like Stanhope is like that to an extent, where it's like, yeah, he's very famous. He has a big following. But, like, if people saw live his 90 minutes he puts on, people would be like, oh, that's the best comedian alive.
Yeah, he's doing what I love to watch as a comedian. As a comedian, he's like, and he and I had a conversation about it, too. It's like, one of the things, as you get older, you really appreciate guys that are still doing real fucking comedy. They're still saying what they
really
think.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, because somewhere along the line, I mean, we're not naming names.
Norton's
but
another one of those.
He's another
by the
one.
Way.
Of
he's the
sure.
one who told me to come here.
Oh, really?
By the way, we were at the comedy salon. Awesome. And we were talking about podcasts, and he goes, "Have you ever listened to Rogan's podcast?" And I go, "No." He goes, "It's incredible. You got to go on. It's incredible." And so then I started listening to it, and then I just dropped you a note.
Oh, that's awesome. I love Norton. Norton and I went to see Dice in Vegas. Oh. We went and sat in the audience. Norton and I and Bobby Kelly and Brian and Anthony Cumia.
Wow.
And Sam Roberts, we all went there, drove a big fucking limo together.
Oh,
we all
nice.
Had dinner. It was like a gentleman's night.
It was great.
It was fun.
Nice.
We ate at a steakhouse, and then we all went to a show.
That's fun.
You know, yeah, it was
well,
fun.
Yeah, I did that
great.
I did that. I'm going to counter that with a much dorkier version of that, which is my wife and I. My wife and I and Ira Glass, who co-wrote my film, and his wife, the four of us went to see Stanhope at Caroline's.
That was
the last
comedy
show. And because Ira had never seen Stanhope, and I was like, you got to see this guy. There's nothing like him.
Yeah, I loved Doug.
And then, of course, Doug, when he finds out Ira's there, makes fun of Ira, makes fun of public radio for like 15 minutes. And Ira's like, how did this become about me? I just want to go see a show.
Listen, man, if you're on national public radio, it becomes about you if you're in your room.
Yeah, I know.
If you're in the room, it's just that is a silly topic. They're not allowed to have any emotions. Everything has to be talking about it like this. Completely unreasonable.
But Ira's show is incredible. It's very different.
Is it different?
This American Life, have you ever listened to
it?
No,
never. No.
Oh, you'd love it.
Really?
This
Great
American
stuff?
Life is incredible. It is... It's funny, I've never had to sell it to anybody before because people listen to it so much, but like, it's like...
I've seen it in the ratings.
It's a radio... It's a weekly radio documentary. Imagine your favorite film documentary and take that to radio, and it's incredible what they do. It's like a fucking miracle.
Really?
It's a fucking miracle.
Wow.
You personally would love it.
Dude, I'm on it.
Yeah.
I'm on it. I'll get on it today.
Onit.com.
You should go on their onit.com. You should go on their website and look at, like, you know, they have like a list of like, these are the legendary episodes, the gateway drug.
Oh, really?
The gateway drug of this American Life, yeah.
Oh, that's a good idea, to have, like, the episodes that they
you
feel
guys
best
should,
represent.
You guys should
them.
Have that.
I should totally have that. I'm lazy.
Yeah.
I'm lazy, dude.
Where are you on that? Where are you guys on that? What's going on?
We're not
on?
Anywhere on that. Where we just put them up there. But there's a lot of websites that sort them out. We can only do so much,
Yeah,
man.
You can only do so much.
And we're doing, like, three and four of these a week sometimes.
Wow.
Yeah, lately it's been four, you know?
Jesus.
Like, we're doing three together, and I did one yesterday with Brian Callen, just me and Brian.
Oh, cool.
And then we usually do Brian's Ice
another
House
one.
Chronicle.
Brian's another one, by the way, comedian you might not know, but
yes.
He's fucking hilarious.
Hilarious. Ridiculous. Yeah, he came over to my house last night, and we had a little family barbecue. It was fun.
Yeah.
He's
nice.
He's just such a silly boy.
Absolutely.
He's so fucking silly. He's such a fun dude. And Norton.
If people, I love that phrase. If people knew about this.
Norton is a guy, even though everybody knows him from the Opie and Anthony show. And
yeah.
There's not enough people that know how funny he is as a stand-up.
As a stand-up, yeah.
I saw him in Austin. I was in town doing a UFC, and I got a chance to just sit down and watch a gig.
Oh, yeah.
It's really fun to do.
It's fun, yeah.
Yeah, and especially if it's a guy like Norton. He made me change my act a little bit.
Really?
Yeah, because I realized I was doing too long sets. I wanted to do like these really long sets because I didn't want anybody to feel like they didn't get their money's worth.
I feel that way too.
Really long set.
I have that same thing.
But Norton did like an hour and just fucking laid it down.
He just owned it.
And I was like, you know what, man? Maybe that's a better thing. Maybe so I cut my sets down from like an hour and a half plus to like an hour and 10 minutes. Because I feel like nobody should talk for more than an hour and 10 minutes,
When I started working the door, I started out working the door at the DC Improv, and what is that?
That's a stupid clock. Yeah, he's got a fucking cat clock. No, that's not a distraction, dude. You're right.
No, but I started out working the door at the DC Improv, and it was really like comedy college because I was opening for like, you know, every week it'd be like Jake Johansson, Brian Regan, you know. Mitch Hedberg, Dave Attell, you know, and Pablo Francisco.
Oh yeah,
that's a lesson in comedy. You watch him; he's another. If people knew about it,
yeah,
what a live Pablo Francisco shows like he does back then, at least the week I opened for him, did 45 minutes, blew the doors off the room in a way that I've never seen. Like, I've never seen anything like that.
Pablo doesn't just do a comedy show. It's like a multimedia presentation.
It's
because he can make so many crazy noises with his mouth, and he has so many nutty impressions of people.
Yeah.
And it's like a multimedia presentation sometimes.
He's somebody who, if he really opened up and did some personal stuff combined with the talent that he has with the noises and the sounds and everything.
Yeah, but I don't think he can.
Oh, wow. Would that be a good show?
Yeah, it would be a very good show.
That'd be something else.
Yeah, he's a great guy, too.
Really Pablo nice Francisco. Guy.
That's one of the coolest things about comedy is that a lot of people like assume that every comic is fucked up and that, you know, so many of them are antisocial and depressed. And I don't find that to be the case. I find to be the case is like there's a lot of funny guys like Stanhope.
Yeah.
They're fun to be around. They're nice guys.
I love what Stanhope said when there was that whole comedy school debate happening.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
with
yeah.
Kyle Cease and everything. And Stanhope just said he's going to have a free one in Bisbee where he lives. I just love that. It's just like everybody should show up, just bring some drinks. Like Stanhope's whole thing is just like you learn about comedy, like offering the comedian you're opening for drinks after the show, just asking questions.
That is a better way to learn.
I think that's how I learned.
I have a real problem with comedy classes that are taught by people who are non-comedians. I've seen that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's just craziness.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't even make sense. That's like English speaking taught by people who don't speak English. Like, if you haven't actually done stand-up, and you have to do it for years, you have to get your dick kicked into the dirt on numerous occasions, you know? I mean... Don't you think that made you as a comedian, really tough sets in the beginning, where you kind of realize what you got to do to fix?
Yeah, that's what my entire movie is about. It's about failure and failure and failure, and then finding at the end of the movie, the character has just kind of, you see one sequence of, oh, this guy's going to figure it out.
Yeah.
Eventually.
I think we all start off terrible. I've never met anybody that started off good.
No, I think it's for me. Like I always tell people, all comedians, people who want to be comedians, get a job at a comedy club. Because like I worked at the DC Improv at the door, and then after I punched out from making minimum wage, I got to watch the show for free.
Yeah,
and that's what you need.
Yes,
you just need to see comedians over and over and over again, and eventually go. Okay, I can do something like that.
It's a weird thing when you start to realize that it's a craft, but that yours is, it seems like it's kind of similar to other people's, but it's not. It's your weird take on shit, and you got to find out what the fuck that is. You got to find the silly. It
takes years.
Find the preposterous. Yeah, it takes so long, man. And you get conflicted, and you don't know if you're being full of shit. Am I being, is this an affected attitude that I'm putting on? Is it obvious?
Yeah, when I was starting out, I was totally putting on an affect.
Ugh, I hate that. Because it's so embarrassing.
Well, because it is embarrassing.
You look back on those sets.
Well, no, because I was, and everybody does, though. I mean, even, like, Geraldo is one of my favorite comedians of all time and was a friend of mine, and, like, he even said, like, he's like, when I started out, like, my first TV sets, I sounded like Dave Attell. I was on TV sounding like somebody else before I figured out who I was. Yeah. And then I think Geraldo is one of the great comics. I sounded like Stephen Wright when I started out.
Yeah.
Then I sounded like Mitch Hedberg. And then eventually I sounded like myself.
Yeah, it's hard to avoid, man. It's hard to avoid being like really influenced by the guys that, you know, came before you that were really good. I caught myself sounding like Rich Jenny on stage once.
Really?
Just almost exactly. It was like such an obvious ripoff.
Wow.
Like I was in the middle of the set. Like I kept going with the bit and I finished my set. Like the audience didn't even know.
Yeah.
But to myself, I was like, ew, you fraud.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, you fucking Rich Jenny clone. What are you doing? I was like a year in or something like that, you know? But I'll never forget, like, how embarrassing it was that if I was in the room and I saw me on stage, I'd be like, who's this guy ripping off Rich Jenny? Because, you know, when guys will do that, you're not even ripping off material. You're just ripping off being that guy.
Yeah. People say that. I had that with Stephen Wright, Mitch Hedberg, and then inadvertently Todd Barry. People were like, you sound like Todd Barry. And I was like, I'm not even watching. I mean, I like Todd Barry a lot. He's a great comic, but it wasn't like I was watching a ton of Todd Barry at that time.
Well, I think you just have a similar tone to your voice, and it's only mildly similar. Yeah. But people are crazy. They'll find connections in fucking anything. I got off stage once in Kentucky, and some guy came up to me with a list of people. It's like, he said, you know, Patton Oswalt, this and that. I go, what are you talking about? He goes, you sounded like these people.
Oh, God.
And I was like, listen, man, I don't know what to tell you. Did you have a good time? Did you have fun? I don't know what to tell you. You're looking at, what are you saying? You're saying that I'm not me and that I'm all these people?
That's
like, what are you saying?
I like that response.
There was a bunch of them, too.
Hey, did you have a good time?
Yeah, that's all I could say to him. I'm like, listen, I hope you had a good time at the comedy show. Crazy.
Yeah.
You're not going to sit here and you're going to analyze who my influences were.
Yeah.
And you're angry at me for being influenced by great comedians. But I don't even think that's what it was. I think it was like, you know, people will try to find a connection in anything. You know when – I listened to my recording after the guy said that to me because I was like, what the fuck is this guy – there was a couple of obscure ones in there too. I don't remember who his references were. But it was like Richard Lewis was one of them.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the fuck are you even saying?
Yeah.
And then I went and listened to it and I didn't hear any of it. Somebody will – if they're looking – and then there's people that just are crazy – and their perceptions are just off, and they'll get a thought in their head, and they don't have the ability to discern whether or not it's an objective thought, whether or not it's a reasonable thought. They just got that thought, and they fucking run with it. And with you, they're like, Todd Barry. Sounds like Todd Barry.
Well, it's funny because I the person I listen to the most was Woody Allen, but no one ever accuses me of sounding like Woody Allen because I'm like a suburban white kid grown up, and he's this short Jewish man from New York City. We just don't look like each other in any way, shape, or form, and I think people don't make that connection.
So do you feel like you were influenced in delivery-wise?
Yeah, people
don't realize what a great comic he was.
He's incredible. That one album, which is a compilation of, I think, three records, is incredible. Woody Allen's Stand-Up Comedian, I think it's called.
Yeah.
And it's so good.
What a weird guy, huh? I mean, married his daughter in front of the world. I mean, that is intensely weird.
That is hard.
That is intensely
and super hot, also.
Is she super hot?
No, I said, and it's kind of super hot, also.
Oh man, I don't see it.
I can't get behind the super hot.
Yeah, it's just crazy, creepy, man.
Yeah.
I mean, how did they ever even develop that kind of a relationship? That doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
That seems to me like that should never be able to happen.
That shouldn't be on the table.
Yeah.
It's
like,
not
what?
One of the options.
And I wonder what the blowback was for him, for Woody Allen, this great director.
You mean
Annie
his career?
Hall. Yeah.
It was a big blowback.
Yeah.
I mean, there are people, because I'm such a big fan of his, there are people who I talk to this day who go, once that happened, I will not see his movies again.
Yeah, I've heard
There's
that.
There's a lot of people.
I've heard that from, especially from women.
From women particularly, yeah.
Well, they, you know, it's almost like you can't trust him around your kids. Like, that's the feeling that they get. It's like he's got
But he's
these
not going to
show
He's not at
sexual,
the movie theater. He's
right.
not at the movie theater with you when
yeah.
you see the movies. So you don't have to be worried
yeah,
about
but
your
there's
kids.
People that just won't support you after. Like, what's the guy's name that escaped to France?
Oh, yeah, Roman Polanski, one of my favorite directors.
Yeah.
And it's and he was he was convicted of that horrible crime.
Yeah, what did he do?
But he wasn't convicted because he fled, right?
It was a weird thing.
He drugged a teenage girl and had sex with her, something like that. But then there's this whole documentary about that case called, I think it's called Wanted, and it shows the shades of gray in that case. That case was really complex, and there was a judge who was really high and mighty and kind of like got carried away about his or her own ego and how the judge him or herself, I forget what it was making headlines by saying certain things in the court. And then it became like a spectacular event where he might have gotten like a year in jail or something, but then it got kind of blown out of proportion and it was going to be a big, much bigger deal.
Jesus.
Yeah. It's a really good movie, actually. I think it was on HBO. I think it's called Wanted.
Wanted.
It's like Roman Polanski Wanted or something
like
that.
Yeah, his case is really disturbing, man. And then this is after his wife had been murdered by the Manson family.
Oh, I know.
So you got to realize, like, this guy was...
There's a lot going on.
Yeah. I mean, what he did was horrific for sure, though. But what a fucked up state of mind he had to have been in after his wife was murdered by the Manson family while she was pregnant.
I have to say, like,
You'd be insane.
Some weird shit happens in California.
Fuck yeah. Right? Well, yeah, absolutely.
Can we just talk about that?
Yeah,
like, I feel like the Polanski stuff, I'm just like, when I watch it, it feels so distant from my existence in New York. I'm like, yeah, that's some California shit that I can't understand.
Do you like living in New York?
I love it, yeah.
Do you live in the city?
My wife and I lived in the city for a while, and then we just moved to Brooklyn recently.
Why'd you move to Brooklyn?
Get some space.
Yeah.
You know, just like we were sick of living in this little cramped area.
Oh, so you have a bigger place?
Yeah. We have a few bedrooms, and we're able to... And also just walk around and have some trees around.
Mm.
We lived on the Upper West Side in Manhattan, and it was like getting to a point where our favorite like local restaurants were closing down. H&H Bagels closed down. Nico's Greek restaurant closed down. Like a lot of places were closing down to the point where like they closed down. This is a bad sign of like when times are bad. We thought it was sad when they closed down Barnes & Noble. Like, we were like, oh, that's too bad. Our local bookstore got shut down.
I felt
down.
Like Circuit City, I felt like.
Yeah.
We lost to Circuit City, too.
Yeah, we lost
one
of those.
It's super common,
guys.
Man. I mean, think about in our lifetime, when has there ever been a period of time where more businesses closed down than today?
I don't know.
I can't
Not
remember.
Not in my lifetime.
I don't remember anything like this before.
No.
Yeah.
But Brooklyn, on the other hand, is like really burgeoning. Like,
oh, really?
Small restaurants, small bakeries, small like ice cream shops like are able to open there because the real estate isn't that expensive to rent. Commercial real estate isn't as expensive, so you're getting like better food, better like just baked goods, ice cream, grocery stores, local grocery stores with local produce. Like it's bad. I mean, I don't want to sell it too hard, but I think it's better. Like we're happier there.
It seems like a little bit of a compromise, a little bit better a compromise. Like you're in sort
That's
of
what
a,
it is.
You're in not a suburban area, but it's a little sub-city.
And it's slower.
A little slower.
To be honest with you. The people are a little slower. You're kind of like, you're at the ice cream store and you're like, huh, come on, what are we doing? What's going on? You're just walking over there. Like you get a little brisk step, you know, like bring a little pep to it.
Is it jazz
people
music?
People are so used to fucking being so crazy in New York.
Yeah, I know.
That hive is so nuts.
Yeah.
It's just such a, it's so, it mimics insects. It's really crazy. So when you get them all together in this big, you know, thing that they've created, and they're all swarming in this giant population center, I mean, it's really not that much different than a beehive
yeah.
or an anthill. It's fucking crazy. So many people there.
My wife and I went, and this was even more the case. My wife and I rented a house in Western Massachusetts this summer for a month so that we could just write and relax and, like, do get away from, like...
Like out the, Amherst the way?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. North of Northampton.
Beautiful out there.
Gorgeous, but so slow.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Everything is, like, you go in somewhere, you order a cup of coffee, you're like, we're going to be here for a little bit. Like, even though there's no line.
It's the country. And it's really nice, though.
But it was funny because my wife has been saying since we've been together probably about 8 years, got married 4 years ago. And since we met, she was like, I think that I belong in the country. I think that we should move to the country. And I was always like, I can't. Like, I got to work. This is where I work in the city because there's comedy clubs and this is where my one-man shows are. And we finally took a month after being together for 8 years and went to the country. And we brought our cat, Ivan. And who had never been anywhere but our apartment.
Whoa.
So he was shocked. And there were mice in the house. And they were, this is a really strange phenomenon. They were parasitic mice. They had parasites in them, which means they're unafraid of people or cats.
Oh, that means they have toxoplasma.
Yeah, that's exactly what they have.
Whoa.
And so usually if you have a cat, that's you don't crazy. Even see mice because they smell cats and they don't even come out. In this case, we had mice, like they were like zombies. They were walking towards us. We were like batting them away like a fucking video game.
Yeah, isn't that sick? And those are the dangerous ones. Those are the ones that can infect you.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah. They have a massive impact on human behavior.
If they bite you, is that right?
Yeah, if it gets into your skin either through cat fecal matter, you get if the cat's infected, you can get it from the cat. You can get it from livestock that it comes in contact with this shit.
And so Ivan ate one of the mice.
Oh, no. So you got an infected cat.
Yeah, and so we instead of a month there, we were there for 2 weeks, drove home.
Whoa.
After he ate the mouse, and then we took him to the vet, and he took whatever medicine to knock that stuff out.
I don't think they can stop that stuff. It's a brain parasite. I thought it is what it is.
I think... whatever it was, it's checked out. I don't know. They gave him medicine and
you got a zombie cat.
I know we got a zombie cat. Yeah,
that's not good.
He's old though. He's 16 years old. So
time to go.
He's in his golden years.
Get him out of there before he infects the house. Sounds crazy, but toxoplasma really is something that people have to have an issue with because it does have an effect on human behavior. It makes people more aggressive. It slows your reaction time down, and a lot of the world has it. Huge population.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, in France, it's been as high in, I believe it was the 1950s or 1960s, it got as high as 80%. Wow. 80% of the country had it. And now it's down to the 50s. This is all estimations, of course. I mean, you're not like really testing the entire population. Yeah. They estimate that America, it's somewhere around 50 to 60 million people are infected
For anyone getting their news from Joe Rogan's podcast.
Yeah, you're in trouble. By the way, because I haven't backed up any, I've done no research. I'm just telling you what I read.
Yeah.
But the idea is that once you get it, you got it. That's it.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a brain parasite.
Jesus.
Makes the mice sexually attracted to cat piss. What a motherfucker.
Yeah.
Like, what a crazy.
That's mean.
Fucking disease.
That's twisted. Well, my wife was sitting on the couch in the house. And there was a mouse. She looked next to her. There was a mouse just sitting there staring at her. And
you
see a mouse, and it just runs away immediately. And in this case, it was just staring at her, and she just ran away. And then I had to chase the mouse out of the house.
Fuck that. There's something really creepy about rodents, man.
I know. Well, have you ever heard the Rat King concept?
No.
I just heard about this recently. There's apparently a book... I have a comedian friend named John Hodgman, who's a very knowledgeable man, and he's written a lot of very funny and great books. And he's on The Daily Show. He's a correspondent on The Daily Show sometimes. He's on there. But anyway, he was telling me there's this book, and I think it's called Rats. It's all about the culture of rats, and that there's this phenomenon theoretically called the Rat King, which is that certain rats are in such an enclosed space that after a while... their tails are intertwined, so they're existing essentially as one large rat unit.
What?
I don't know if I can substantiate this, but that's, people should look up Rat King.
That sounds like some comic book shit, man.
Look up Rat King.
I need to look that up. Rat King? That doesn't seem like it. It seems like something you would know about. Was he just joking?
He wasn't joking.
Really?
No. Apparently there's this book called, I think, Rats, and it sheds a lot of light on...
Folklore.
I'm incidentally looking at myself in this... In this camera, and... Just going, oh, man, have I put on weight on the road. It's so painful.
The road's brutal.
Is brutal.
It's hard to... What is this? A Rat King in the Scientific Museum. Oh, my God.
So it is real, right?
Oh, my God. Brian, pull this up on Wikipedia, because this is going to freak you the fuck out, Brian, when you see this.
We lost Brian.
Oh, that son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Yo, Brian! How dare he?
The loudness with which you shouted is so inappropriate to what you're going to tell him.
Yeah. It's
like,
not.
Brian!
No.
Get over here!
No, you need to see this.
You need a Wikipedia Rat King.
You need to see this. This is incredible, man. This is this really is a real phenomenon. I thought your friend was just fucking with you.
No. We had a serious conversation about rats.
Whoa. That seems like horrific.
Yeah.
If you go to it, folks, if you go to the folks listening to this.
People probably tweet at you right now facts about the Rat King. I bet some of your listeners and viewers know about the Rat King.
Hey, we need you to pull something up, man. We just something crazy. It's called a Rat King. So Mike Birbiglia said this to me. I thought he was just fucking around. I thought his friend was just fucking around. But apparently there are clumps of rats that get connected together by the tail, and they grow together while joined at the tails. So there's like a group of, like, in this photo, there's a group of, it looks like 30 or 40 of them, just on top of each other, connected by the tails. Rat King. Just pull up Rat King on Wiki. It's the photo that connects to it. Can you imagine if you ran into that somewhere?
No, it's the stuff of nightmares. Oh. It's what one should fear most.
Rodents are fucking scary animals, man.
Yeah.
They're so gross.
Yeah.
Gross little fuckers.
Oh.
You got it, Rat King?
Yeah.
The image at the top? Look at that. Click on that.
Oh, my God.
Click on that. That's real.
Is this live streaming, the video?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Dude. Look at that thing.
This is insane.
Yeah.
I mean, it's insane.
What the fuck?
All these rats intertwined together.
I came here today to blow Joe Rogan's mind, and I have to...
Oh, you blew it, man. You blew it wide open, because I thought we were having fun. I thought your friend was telling us some crazy... Once there was a Sasquatch, and he lived in the woods. He could read your mind. No, really, a Rat King's a real thing. Fuck,
what's folklore mean, then?
Well, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's not true. It means that it's probably been exaggerated and tossed down from superstitions. But
so it's a rat Bigfoot.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was a bunch of shit, but it's obviously a real thing. It's a real phenomenon. This is in the Scientific Museum in Germany. I mean, it really does happen. But I think. It's probably they probably just are tied up in knots. They're probably not like growing together through the tails. I don't think their tails become one unit. I think they're just gross and they just get tangled up.
It's so gross.
Ira Glass, who's we mentioned earlier, you don't know his show, This American Life, but he was saying the other day that sometimes he's struck with when we live in New York, you live here in LA, with the degree to which we are living like medieval lords. Like we have at our beck and call any food, any type of food we want, prepared any way we want within about 25 minutes.
Yeah.
It's all so in a strange.
Giant human construct.
Yes.
That doesn't resemble anything in nature.
Yeah.
Some nutty thing that they just goes up to the heavens.
Yeah.
Pops out of the ground. Everything else is missing.
Yeah.
So, you know, occasionally you'll see a tree. You'll see one tree, you know, defiantly looking for its friends.
That's why I loved the movie Minority Report when it came out.
Yeah.
Because I was just like, you watch that movie now, you're like, yeah, about half of that stuff is true now.
Yeah.
Like, it was futuristic, but it was futuristic in a way that was like, you can just about see it coming. Like, you walk into the mall, and they go, hello, Joe Rogan. Would you like the Nike shoes that you bought last year? Would you like another fresh pair?
That certainly is going to happen, right?
For sure.
Yeah, it's going to be. They're going to be able it to already turn exists it on your phone.
Well, and the internet always or already exists on Amazon. You go on, they say, well, you might like this.
Yeah, I bought a T-shirt from Cafe Press, and I bought it through Amazon. I went through Amazon.
Yeah.
It goes, do you want to go through Amazon? I'm like, yeah, okay, let's see how that works.
Sure.
Go through Amazon.
Yeah,
I love it.
It's amazing. We live in a weird world, man.
Very strange.
It's we're talking about one-click shopping on Amazon. That it's the easiest way to buy anything, and it's when you start doing it, it becomes so goddamn addictive.
Yeah,
because it feels ridiculous.
I know.
It feels like you can get obscure billiard supplies.
You can,
like, weird shit. Like, I need a Joe Porper tip tapper.
Yeah,
and you can find that on Amazon.
Hardest to return, though. I have so much shit that I just won't return because it's like, I have to go to UPS.
Yeah, you got to take the hit.
No, but I saw the movie Day for Night recently, a Truffaut film, which is great. Have you ever seen that?
No.
Day for Night?
Did you get it from Amazon?
No, but it's about making a film. Yeah, no, I actually did. I got it, I think, from Amazon. And then I was at the end of it, I was like, oh, I'd like to have the poster of this. Click on it. It's, like, it's on the way.
Boom. So it's crazy. So I get these obscure Mexican hot sauces, El Yucateca. I can't find them in any, like, white people grocery store.
Yeah.
You have to go to the Mexican hood to get El Yucateca. Or you just go to Amazon.com. Boom.
How do you resolve, incidentally, because you're very knowledgeable about pizza, how do you fit that into the diet? Because you have such a good diet.
Just got to make sure you don't eat it all the time. The most important thing is that your base, like, you never want to deprive your body of nutrients, but you can have cheat days, totally.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
I think cheat meals, cheat days, just as long as you're being reasonable, long as, like, 80% of your food is really good food and healthy, and every now and then you have a burger or something like that, you could do that.
You
get away
meat?
With it. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, I've tried vegetarian before. I tried it when I was trying to lose weight when I was a kid, when I was fighting in different weight classes, and I didn't like it. I just felt shitty. I didn't feel like I was very vibrant.
Yeah.
I haven't tried it again as an adult, but I know I crave meat. I crave it. Like, after a good workout, I want a fucking steak.
Yeah.
And I feel like my body wants red meat.
Yeah.
And people say, that's unevolved and lustful killing and... Those cows are not going to live forever if you just let them walk around. And if people aren't killing cows, something's going to kill cows. Either cars, because you're going to hit them with your cars because they're going to be everywhere, or you're going to have mountain lions running around taking cows out in front of you every day. That's a possibility, too.
Yeah. I think it's the inhumane aspect of keeping them in crates slightly larger than their body that I think frustrates people.
Yeah, I haven't had veal in a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
The veal was the first one I tapped out on. I was just like, I can't do that.
Yeah.
That's just too creepy. Taking a baby and not feeding it and tying it in a knot so it can't move.
Oh,
nope. Nope. No thanks. Yeah, that's so fucked up. I'm just like, I got no time for that. So it's more tender? Really? What the fuck, man?
What's funny is I'm looking at your image. You're behind a computer, but I can see you here. And you can see me. What's funny is if your body and if you have a really good physique, if you ended up having my body, you might go into a deep depression. Like, you would be really upset. And if I had your body, my comedy career would go away because all I do is just make fun of my own body and self.
But you can make fun of anything, man.
Yeah.
If you make fun of your own body, if you're self-deprecating, you can make fun of something else. So
you actually defy, because you're great. I was listening to your albums this week. You defy the Joe Piscopo rule, which is that if you get too fit, you're no longer funny.
People are silly. There's no rules to comedy.
No,
we should know that by now.
I think Piscopo was the line in the sand where people are like, oh, okay, that's how it works.
No, with Piscopo, the problem was he had a few good things that he did on Saturday Night Live, a few good sketches, but overall there wasn't that much there. So he didn't put enough effort into it. He didn't.
Yeah.
It's no different than any other comic, like Michael Richards, that you know, goes from being an actor to being a comic and just can't really pull it off.
Yeah.
There's not much difference. It's a hard road. No one has to tell you that. To become a stand-up comic is a long, hard fucking road.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of us who stay on it. If you stop and think about, like, the guys that you hung out with when you were an open micer.
Totally different.
Yeah, and yeah. Look at the guys that you know now. How many of them made it? Me and Fitzsimmons started out together. So,
yeah,
like,
I can see
like
that.
Literally, like, weeks apart from each other. So, like, he's, like, one of the only guys, like, from my group of open micers that made it over the salmon net.
No one from my open mics is working.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say that. No one from my open mics is I still run into anymore.
Nick DiPaolo was always a really funny guy, and he was always in really good shape. He was a football player.
You're right.
Nick is much more handsome than me. Fantastic head of hair.
I discovered this. I went to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, on a USO tour with DiPaolo and Geraldo and Colin Quinn and Gaffing and a bunch of guys, and Geraldo was in great shape too, and so was DiPaolo. Because we went on the beach, we went swimming.
Yeah,
we pulled over because we couldn't get through one of the gates. We were like, well, let's just go swimming in that beach right there. And we all went swimming. There's we still have photos of it. And I'm like, ah, fuck, it's really embarrassing for me. These guys are in really good shape.
Yeah, DiPaolo's always been in good shape. He was one of the guys when I was an open micer. He was a bit more established than me. He was ahead of me by at least maybe like 2 years.
Yeah.
He was an established professional when I was
an open
micer.
Was Louis around at that time?
Yes, yeah. Louis was also about 2 years ahead of me. Those guys, when I first started doing open mics, they were just doing professional gigs. And I got to see DiPaolo once on stage. And I'm like, look at this handsome motherfucker, this football player-looking dude.
No, I
and
know.
He was hilarious. And I that was a nice thing for me to see as a young guy who was involved in athletics myself. I was like, okay, so there is no rule.
Yeah.
Like, anything can, you know. And then I remember when I first saw Kinnison, that's when I realized there was no rules. That's when I first realized, like, oh, anything can be comedy.
Yeah.
And it's just whether or not it's funny. Like,
that's right.
That's comedy, too. This is a different thing he's doing.
That's right.
Like, when Kinnison was going, I live in hell. Oh, oh, look at this face. I was married. You know, that fucking, he goes when he,
good
remember when he, he was one of my earliest influences.
Yeah.
When he did that bit about getting married, the devil doesn't even try to scare you. Yeah. He's like, you've been married? Oh, this is going to be like fucking Club Med for you. Come on in. This is where we torture the souls. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
You're married. Hell will be like Club Med. He was
great.
He was the first to me that like really like, cemented in my head that anything could be comedy, because I always loved comedy, but I was always like way too loud and aggressive and stupid to connect myself to someone like Jerry Seinfeld.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I was like I would have to be a totally different person to be that kind of comedian. I could never do that.
Yeah.
I don't think I could do that.
Yeah.
But then I saw Kinnison and I was like, oh, there's no rules.
Yeah.
You don't have to be Jerry Seinfeld. You just have to be whatever is funny from you, whatever comes out of you.
This podcast must be great for you because when you tour now, it's probably your audiences who get your sense of humor.
Yeah.
As opposed to like Fear Factor fans who are like, well, let's see him do the bugs in the mouth.
Yeah, the Fear Factor is hard for all.
Because I heard that bit on your album where you're like, that's just a show I hosted. That's not me. That wasn't my idea.
But to a lot of people, though, it's such a big thing because it's on television that it has to, like, define you from
there
right. on. That it has to be your thing. But I was always like, why? Like, it's my gig.
But that's what's crazy about the technology of these podcasts right now is that you can actually say,
yeah.
no, I'm this.
Yes.
I'm going to tell you what I am. It's this.
Well, you get an opportunity to express yourself in a way deeper way than would ever be possible in a million Tonight Show appearances.
Yeah.
You'd never be able to get that across.
That was always my goal starting out, is because I would do these hell gigs. I drove, like I do in the movie, it's like I drove my mom's station wagon all over the country. I bought, incidentally, it's like I only find out at this age now, it's like people's parents gave them their car or like bought mm-hmm. them a car. It's like I bought my mom's station wagon for $2,200. It had 100,000 miles on it. Like, she marked it up.
Wow.
My mom marked up
That's
her station
hilarious.
Wagon, and I drove it around the country. And I would perform at these gigs. It would be like, you know, like every, just so people have a point of reference, like when I was starting out, like whenever you're in the middle of nowhere, you're in like you know, Cherry Hill, Pennsylvania, Cherry Hill, New Jersey, and you drive by like a Best Western and it says Comedy Night Wednesday. That was my life. Yeah. I was Comedy Night Wednesday.
I did a lot of those too. A lot of those Barry Katz gigs.
Yeah, and so my goal when I was in that stage, because I wouldn't do well. You know, the audiences wouldn't like me. They came to see something different than what I was. I wasn't also that good. So it was like, it was the combination of what I would become was like a soft-spoken kind of storyteller, and then what they wanted was like fast jokes.
Lenny Clark.
Yeah, they wanted Lenny Clark. Yeah, who's a great comic, but yeah. he could kill it anywhere. And so what I was like, I want people eventually to come to see my shows on purpose. And that's why I started, started keeping a mailing list.
And you also got very successful with your blogs. I remember you were the first guy. We were somewhere. I can't remember what city it was, but you were in a big place. You were in like this big theater. And I go, damn. I go, Mike Birbiglia is playing here? I go, how the fuck is he doing that? And then I forget who I was with. It was either Joey Diaz or Ari Shaffir. One of those guys was like, he's got this blog that's like really, really popular.
He's got this blog.
And I was like, damn, man, that's a big impact. Like, this was years ago. It was before we ever even did the podcast.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, like, that's a lot of impact from, you know, connecting with people on the internet.
Well, part of it was like I wrote my blog. It was called My Secret Public Journal, and I still do it. And then the Bob and Tom show out of Indianapolis, and they're syndicated, was like, just read your Secret Public Journal on our show. So I would call in every week. And it was actually very similar to like Cable Guy. Cable Guy used to do stuff like that on radio. Do you know that Cable Guy used to do like, he used to do call-ins every week?
Yeah.
To like all over the place. Like
yeah.
He would be doing like 20, 25 phoners a week.
Wow.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
I haven't even thought about that approach.
He's a really hard worker. I mean, I don't know what he does now, but he back then.
I met him a long time ago in Montreal when he was just starting out. Nobody knew about him. It was like the early 90s, and he was a nice fucking guy.
Nice guy.
Had a great time with him. I hung out with him one night, and we partied at the Comedy Works in Montreal, got hammered together.
Yeah.
He was a great dude, man.
Yeah, I like
him. We had some fun. And he's got some great potato chips. He sent us. He listens to the podcast.
Right? Are you serious?
So he sent over his potato chips.
That's ridiculous.
He's got cheeseburger potato chips.
Yeah, you can taste the pickles. You can taste the meat.
Of course, he has cheeseburger potato chips.
It is probably the worst thing on earth for you.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how the fuck they're giving you all these different flavors, but it's like a joke. I mean, like you eat a chip and you're like, I taste the burger. There's the ketchup. There's a pickle. What the fuck?
It's so funny. Last night at my hotel, because I'd eaten dinner at that in between stage, like 6 p.m., and then it's midnight. You're going, I got to eat something. So I went to the mini bar and I had Pirate's Booty. I had Pirate's Booty and the flavor was aged cheddar. And I was like, what the fuck is aged cheddar in this like manufactured chip that's from some factory somewhere? It's like, is that really aged cheddar?
Yeah,
what chemical creates the taste of aged cheddar?
It's like strawberry gum. It doesn't taste anything like strawberries. It's just what we agree to strawberry gum. Like grape gum. Grape gum doesn't taste like fucking grapes. The last thing that should taste like is grape. It tastes like grape gum.
Right.
You know,
and it's not purple.
Right, like grape soda. It doesn't taste anything like grapes. We get it in our head that that's the grape flavor.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, does grape soda even have grapes in it?
No.
Right? It's just some fucking sugar water. But there's a fake grape taste that we accept.
Right.
And it's like the gum taste, that grape gum taste. It's fake. It's a fake grape. We just go, it's grape. That doesn't taste anything like grape. Like, what are you talking about? You know, that's like if I gave you a cheeseburger and it tasted like feet. You know, it's not.
Look what's on Amazon, though.
The Cable Guy.
Cheeseburger tater chips.
Pack they're 20 three. Bucks.
Oh, pack of three, though.
Pack of three. Damn.
Oh, my God.
Cheeseburger potato chips.
And that's another guy, by the way, doesn't need the money, so he clearly believes in cheeseburger potato chips.
Look, they were very tasty.
They were delicious.
But I was feeling like with each chip, I was rolling the crazy dice. I was like, what's in this shit?
Yeah.
Who knows what kind of – it's going to grow breasts on you.
You know what it's like? It's like Willy Wonka at the Chocolate Factory.
It really is.
When they take the thing, it's like, what does it taste like? Oh, it tastes like this, whatever the thing was.
That's exactly what it's like. Dude, I didn't even think of that. I forgot about that. That's exactly what it's like.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm telling you. What was it?
Do you remember? Do you guys remember? I forget what it was. It's like, does it taste like this? And he's like, yeah, it does.
I don't remember, but I do remember.
But it was like a piece of gum that basically tasted like a food experience.
Right.
Yeah. Well, they're closing in on that.
They're closing in on that.
It's like ghostly. It's ghostly. It's not distinct. It's not like, you know, habanero pepper, distinct flavor. It's a ghostly, like, oh, there's the, yeah, there's a mustard in that fucking thing. But it's really good.
It is.
It's really good. But you're rolling the health dice.
You know what'd be good with that? Those potato. You know what'd be good with those potato chips? Like some kind of cheese, meaty cheese dip.
Oh Jesus you Christ, know? Son! You're getting my dick hard.
Queso, meaty queso.
Yeah.
When you talk to Europeans, though, they say that what's killing us is the preservatives.
Oh yeah,
because the Europeans are not very overweight, and they eat cheese and wine and all this.
Well, they also have unpasteurized cheese. They have a lot of unpasteurized cheese in Europe. You can't even get it over here. It's like I had a friend from France, and he used to have to smuggle it in.
Really?
To smuggle in unpasteurized cheese from France. Yeah, it's so crazy.
Wow.
And by the way, there's a reason why your body has a lactose intolerance. It's because you're drinking milk that's been boiled down and is dead.
Yeah.
There's no enzymes in it. There's no, like, all this stuff that makes your body naturally digest it, it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
You know, so the idea is that, like, we have to protect people from bad milk. Yeah, but you know what's a better idea? Fresh milk.
Yeah.
We got to figure out how to not have milk sitting in a supermarket for 3 months.
That's what we
got to have people closer to their animals.
We had the, growing up, we had the, I don't know if you remember this in Massachusetts, the Lundgren and Jonitis, like, milk store. Milk in glass bottles, and they would deliver it to your house.
Foil tops.
Yeah, exactly.
They peeled them off.
It was great.
Amazing milk.
Oh.
And it used to,
I don't think that place exists anymore.
Yeah, I don't know if that was pasteurized or homogenized. But they used to have it at Whole Foods, but now you got to go to there's like a little specialty markets
in
California.
Do they have it in Whole Foods?
Not at all. No, not anymore. Whole Foods is like they're so big that they there's certain shit they don't take a risk with. Like there's a kombucha that is more than 0.5% alcohol. And because of that, they won't carry it. But it's just it's nothing. It's not like a level that can get you drunk. But it is, you know, it ferments, and it's really fucking good for you. And the one that ferments the most is really the best for you. And they don't carry it because it gets a little risky with the alcohol.
Right, very risky.
So that's why they don't have that. They don't have raw milk there anymore. It's like it's too risky. But I don't know if that's a corporate decision or what, but it's unfortunate because raw milk, man, it doesn't give you any, like, weird stomach shit. Tastes way better. Once you get used to the fact what you're drinking, it's, like, rich and creamy. It's, like, it's really fucking good.
I was flying to California recently, and I was on a plane, and I had one of those mornings where you show up at the airport, and you're so hungry that you just grab anything. I was like at Chibo or whatever that place is called at JFK.
Yeah.
You're just like, I'll have any, just in case, you know, I need something. I'll have a banana, I'll have a sandwich, anything. You have this bag of stuff. And I get on the plane and I'm just scarfing down this chicken salad sandwich. And the flight attendant comes over to me and he goes, excuse me. He goes, are there nuts in that sandwich? I'm like scarfing down the sandwich and I look down and I'm like, I think so. I think there's walnuts in the sandwich. And I know that this is going to go badly. And so as I'm talking, I'm still eating the sandwich. I'm like, oh, I think so. And he's like, the woman who's two seats down from you, she has a nut allergy. So you have to put that away. And I was just like, I won't like make her eat them. You know, like I won't, you know, rub them on her body. I'm just going to eat it right here. And he was like, it's actually, even if the nuts are in the air.
Oh, okay.
And I looked over at the woman and I go, excuse me. I go, will you have an allergic reaction if there are nuts in the air? And she goes, yeah, I have an allergy and I'll have an episode if there's nuts in the air. And I was just thinking, like, I didn't say this, but I was like, you shouldn't leave the house.
Yeah, right. You should have like, a bubble
there's
around
a lot
you.
Of air.
Is that even real, though?
I don't know.
So you can't go in the grocery store?
So this is what happened. I go,
I don't know.
I was in that stage where I was having, like, eating, like, I was about to have eating blue balls. where you're halfway through a sandwich and you're like, if I don't finish this sandwich, I'm going to flip out. So I said to the guy, I was like, is there anywhere I can eat this sandwich? And he said, I'm not making this up. He goes, you can eat it in the bathroom.
Wow. Oh,
and so I went to the bathroom and I finished my sandwich.
Oh my God.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. That seems ridiculous. But the nut allergy thing is strange. It's like, I really don't want people to die because they have a nut allergy, but I'm also kind of like, well, then I guess.
Whoa, this is real.
Yeah, the allergy thing?
Yeah, this is real. Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, they should have breathing things that they have to wear if they're going in public.
It shouldn't go on the 150 passengers in the flight
for
the person with the nut allergy.
Why can't she just have one of those little Asian masks, you know, like the little white masks?
Yeah, for SARS. Yeah.
It can be. Wow, this is really interesting, man.
That doesn't seem right.
And then I asked her, I go, is this, do you fly a lot? I mean, is this something you do? I mean, and she said, yeah, and when I'm on Southwest, I call in advance. When I call in advance, they take all the nuts off the plane.
Oh, my God.
She said, whoa, there are no nuts on the plane when I fly. And I was just like, who is this girl?
Like, that's insane.
What kind of power does she wield?
Yeah, that's
it is
right.
Possible. Here's the thing. They're saying although small amounts of peanut protein can set off a severe reaction, it is rare that people get an allergic reaction from just breathing in small particles of nuts or peanuts. That does mean it's possible. They said it's rare.
Yeah.
It says most foods with peanuts in them do not allow enough of the protein to escape into the air, causing a reaction. And just because the smell of foods containing peanuts won't produce a reaction because the scent does not contain the protein. So what she was just freaking out at the possibility, but most likely since it was like a food, it wasn't just it's a dust from the crunching of the peanuts, apparently.
Oh.
That's enough, apparently, to freak some people out. It's rare, but that's enough for some people, which is crazy.
Yeah, she should drive.
What a weird thing, though, man, to be allergic to a food so badly, like a peanut.
That would suck. And
peanuts
not knowing.
Can kill people, man. They're fucking poison. And we're like, peanut M&Ms, fucking chomp, chomp, chomp. Imagine how weird it would be growing up where everybody's eating poison everywhere around you.
That's
everybody's
nuts.
Eating some shit that if you go to the supermarket, there's tubs of poison. You go and get some peanut butter. That shit will kill you.
I've always felt that way about cell phones, though.
Oh, really?
From moment one when cell phones started to be ubiquitous, I was like, this is going to be the cigarettes of our time.
Well, that's ridiculous. That's
really?
Not nearly as bad as peanuts to people who are allergic to peanuts. People that are allergic to peanuts, it fucking kills you dead, and it's everywhere in tubs of it, and people are eating it in front of you. Chomp, chomp. It's like a common food for kids to take to school. Peanut butter and jelly.
Yeah, but
imagine
if
poison...
If you think about having this to your head all the time...
If you get cancer from your cell phone, you're a pussy. That's what I say.
I'm going to send some brain cancer patients your way.
It might be weird if, like, in, like, 30 years... It might be weird, though, in, like, 30 years if, like, the whole entire
world
United States
cancer
has
of
cancer
brain.
Of the brain, right?
Yeah.
We all die at the
That's
same time.
That's my feeling.
Everybody's right thumb rots off.
Right.
Your texting thumb.
Yeah.
I don't think that it's that much of a concern. There's a lot of radiation we just get from the sun. There's a lot of radiation we get from just the environment. Every time you fly in a plane, you get massive amounts of radiation.
Is that right?
Yeah, every time you fly in a plane, it's supposed to be worse than going through those X-ray machines.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, you're up in the fucking high altitude. You're flying at 35,000 feet. You
yeah,
know?
My wife won't do the new one, the new X-ray.
Oh, really? She gets opted out?
She opts out. She just is freaked out by it. It's
She's
a
right.
lot of radiation.
She's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think they've adequately researched the long-term effects of putting fucking weird particles through people's bodies. And it might work on, you know, there's a thing about any sort of exposure to things that you might be fine, I might be fine, but one person, just like the person that's allergic to peanuts, people's bodies are weird, man. One person could have a totally different reaction to that radiation and really get sick because of it. Everybody's built so different, man. You know, there's just we have similar but varied bodies, and we have to take that into consideration when you know find out what's bad for people. Some people can't even have one drink. Does that mean we should take drinks away? That's ridiculous. Because for most of us, drinks are great.
Yeah.
Some people cannot have that one drink. So imagine living in a world, and I have friends that have done this, where they look at everybody drinking like, you're just, this is everything you're doing. If I did, I would be dead in an alley in a week. I'd just fucking go on a massive bender until I ran out of heartbeats. You know, I mean, that's, it's around us everywhere.
Yeah.
We vary too much. We need to collectively, there's we got a big spectrum fucking of physical, psychological, everything.
Do you ever think about running for office?
Fuck that. Running for office is like, it'd be like becoming a pro wrestler.
Yeah.
That's what it would be like. This is the only way you could equate the two.
Because you're following like a script in a certain way.
You're following a script, and you're entering into some artificial sort of a situation. Like, this isn't real. Like Paul Ryan, we don't know Paul Ryan.
Yeah.
We don't know Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney doesn't even know Mitt Romney.
I was very uninspired by the speeches last night.
It's bizarre. It feels like I'm in a movie.
I watched those speeches, and I was actually really open-minded to like, hey, what do you guys got?
Yeah.
And then I came away just being like, oh, okay, nothing.
It was all rhetoric. It was all get back the country. You, if you have a small business, you did build it.
Yeah.
And it was all just bad, clunky, shitty speeches.
Yeah.
They played a Reagan speech from when Reagan was running against Jimmy Carter. And I was like, God damn, Reagan in the campaign trail could fucking throw it down.
Oh, yeah.
He was an actor.
He was, being an actor, and, you know, even though he was getting on in his days, when he was running for president, the effects of the presidency hadn't quite broken him down like it did during his term.
Yeah.
But he stomped Carter in this 2-minute speech about what's the difference between a recession and a depression. A recession is when a neighbor's out of a job. A depression is when you're out of a job.
Yeah.
And the crowd was cheering. Yeah. And he's like, and to get rid of this depression, we need to put Jimmy Carter out of a job. And the place, they went fucking apeshit.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa. Imagine having that guy breathing down your heels.
Yeah.
Ronald
hard.
Reagan, handsome-ass actor.
Yeah, I know.
Talking a lot of sense.
Well, wait till Clooney runs for office in like 10 years.
He's got no kids. He's got no kids. People are never going to listen to a man who doesn't have children.
Yet.
They're not going to listen to a man who doesn't have children. Trust me. The people who have children will never listen to a man who doesn't have children because they know that there's a physiological change that happens in a person's body, in your brain, in your consciousness, and your understanding of relationships.
But when
you have your own children, and he doesn't have his own children.
Yeah, but what when he runs for president, he's going to have two-year-olds, twins, daughters.
Maybe. We want to see your kids get to be about 15 before you
running.
What
about Matt Damon? He has kids.
Yeah.
Matt Damon could run for office. But the real problem is that the whole system is completely fucked sideways by corruption. There's no way you can run for office. To do what? To be the bidding of the – you're going to be at the bidding of these giant corporations or you're going to have bullets in your brain.
Like, yeah.
Well, you know what the game is.
It's true.
Like, this thing's been bought and sold. And if it wasn't proved to us by Obama, I mean, come on. A guy who is the parent – or his parent is a single mom, right? He's raised in an interracial relationship, grows up poor – lives in Hawaii for a while. I mean, you were talking about a guy who's a total outsider.
Yeah.
Right? And look what happens when he gets in. He passes things like the National Defense Authorization Act that just blindly allows them to arrest people and they have no recourse, allows them to use the military to block civil unrest and to stop civil unrest in this country. All shit that's supposed to be prevented in the Constitution. And he's just allowing this stuff to go through.
Yeah.
Why is he allowing this stuff to go through? Is that what the child of a single parent would really want? Not the fuck it is.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a say. He's at the bidding. They're all at the bidding of money. What is the best way to make money? The best way to make money is to let these motherfuckers loose. Let them do what they want to do in other countries. Let's just make this happen. Give them reasons why we got to make this happen. And that money just keeps fucking flying in. These guys are in a vampire orgy of blood money, just dancing around and drinking in it. And they don't want it to stop. And so Obama, who says that he's going to stop wars, all of a sudden he wins the Nobel Peace Prize and he has to send 30,000 more troops to Afghanistan.
Yeah.
What is that? Is that what – do you really think that's what he wants to do? Do you really think that's what his big change is? His big change is that? Come on, man. It's all crazy. This is a broken system. You're watching these candidates and you're like, this is the last death throes of a dying situation, a dying configuration, the configuration of Democrat versus Republican, you know, and what we're going to do is give America back to the small businesses, to the families. It's like, it's like you're making those Close Encounters noises. Do, 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 do. You're not even saying anything. You're just making the noises that the people want to hear.
Yeah.
You're making the conservative noise. You're sort of underlyingly racist. Little, you know, let's get it back away from this black guy. He's kind of fucked everything up.
Yeah.
Look how white my wife is. You know, there's a little of that going on.
Yeah.
It's nonsense. And meanwhile, the same companies will be controlling things, no matter who's in control. We get wrapped up in shit like gay marriage and immigration and all this different stuff that nobody really gives a fuck about at the top of the heap. And they just keep sucking money out of the system the whole time. We're dancing around worrying about whether dudes should be able to write things down and say, I'm a this now and you're a that now. And, yeah. You know, and then it becomes legal. That we're dicking around about that. The same people are running shit that have always been running shit.
Yeah.
It's hilarious, really. It becomes more and more transparent. You realize, like, what an incredible job they've done of just keeping everybody in the dark and just running things from the background.
Yeah.
As far as, like, running the world, it's really the fucking banks have done a fantastic job. I mean, in despite of all the competition, all the access to information people have today, the fact they still run it the way they run it, it's, like, amazing. They've done a great job. They're bad motherfuckers.
Yeah.
It's just depressing.
It is depressing.
You know, who would want, you know, what person of our age group would want war at this stage of life? What person would think that that's the best option in any culture?
They were
culture?
Even saying it last night in the, like, McCain in his speech was saying we should raise defense spending. Mm. We're going to raise defense spending.
They're so
Isn't
crazy.
Isn't that what you guys are trying to say? We shouldn't spend so much money. I was very confused by what they were saying, what their message was.
The word defense is a funny word because it's not defense
it's
when
offense.
You're in another country.
Yeah, it's all offense.
So when you say raise defense spending, I'm down for strengthening anything in America. But I think I don't see any reason to send someone's kids to some other fucking country to shoot some people they never met because some assholes say that that's the thing that needs to be done. That don't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
It's not that, you know, you don't support the troops, and it's not that you don't think that it's good to have a strong army, because I absolutely do and do. But, oh, this is fucking craziness.
Yeah.
This is chaos. And no one wants to admit it is. So you're dealing with these two guys that are essentially it's gonna vary very little. Maybe there's gonna be like some social debate going on in here. Maybe you know, gay people have a harder time. It'll be harder to get medical pot. I mean, maybe. But other than that, what the fuck is gonna change?
Yeah.
Not that much. Not that much is gonna change.
2:46. All right.
Yeah.
So we're good.
What time you gonna get out of here soon?
Just at, I think at 3:00. I gotta go over and be on Conan. I think at 3:00. That's
you think awesome. At 3:00? What time do you actually go on stage there?
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, I heard they're going to wait for you, dude.
I'm in a haze of kind of interviews and stuff like that these days, and coming here is just kind of like taking time off. You know what I mean? It's like I don't have to. It's like we don't. There's no hard interview questions. It's just kind of hanging out.
It's hard when you're dealing with, like, you have to try to be entertaining all the time, and you have to, like,
yeah.
Try
well, yeah.
To find
answer
a way
the
to
same
be,
questions yeah. over and over and over again.
Yeah.
I invited you to that WGA screening the other night.
Yeah.
And it was crazy because Tim Robbins was there and Tom Hanks were.
Oh, that's
it was
awesome!
Really crazy. And
that is crazy.
They were saying, Tim Robbins was saying to me that he was like, what you're experiencing right now, this kind of haze of like press junk and all that stuff, it's basically what they would do if they literally, if they wanted to make you insane. They'd stick you in a room and ask you the same question over and over again all day until you crack. And that's what you're doing. That's your life right now. And
yeah, that's like if you were like a guilty person, they would bring in a series of investigators that would ask you the exact same questions and see if you have the same answer.
Yeah.
That's actually a great idea.
Isn't that
if you
great?
Could have like 100 investigators and they give you the same questions and you have to give detailed stories, you would fuck that thing up.
Yeah. So it's been like a haze.
Wow. What is your movie called?
Sleepwalk With Me.
Sleepwalk With Me.
I sent you the screener.
You did send it
did
to
you
me.
Get it?
I didn't get it yet.
Here, you want to watch the trailer? Let's watch the trailer because I haven't
throw it up.
Seen the trailer yet. Here we go.
And it's true. I always have to tell people that because inevitably someone will come up to me and they'll be like, is that true? And I'll be like, yeah. And they'll be like, was it? I don't know how to respond to that. Like, I guess I could say it louder, you know, like, yeah. And they'd be like, it's probably true. Say it louder.
Now the big comedian, Matt Tandapiglio.
Hey, y'all ready to lip sync? I can't hear you. That's my lip sync joke.
It's So here's what happened. My girlfriend Abby and I moved in together. She's great. And my sister Janet got engaged.
You're next. Coming your way, baby. Batter up.
And everyone started talking about marriage.
How long have you and Abby been together?
8 years.
Being so long? That's ridiculous.
And that night,
Abby!
I started walking in my sleep.
There's a jack all the room!
Come back to bed.
How long has this sleepwalking been going on?
I don't think it's that serious.
As things with my girlfriend got more tense, my sleepwalking got more dangerous.
You did it, Matt.
First place.
Thank you!
This is the first time I remember thinking, maybe I should see a doctor. And then I thought, maybe I'll eat dinner. I went with dinner. I've decided I'm not gonna get married until I'm sure that nothing else good can happen in my life.
You can say that on stage.
One day I asked my girlfriend, what do you fear most? And she said, I fear you'll meet someone else and you'll leave me and I'll be all alone. And she said, what do you fear most? And I said, bears.
Has your girlfriend heard the jokes?
No.
You should probably mention it.
You say you're going to go see the doctor.
You don't.
You say you want to be a comedian. You're a bartender. I mean, pick a damn plan and stick with it.
He's kidding, but he's not as funny as you.
My parents have been together 40 years, which is, but it's too long. But if you're ever in a relationship that's moving towards marriage and you're not ready, don't go to my sister Janet's wedding. Shirt, loser. Sorry. No, I like it. It's nice.
That looks funny.
That's great,
man.
Man.
That looks great. Yeah, it was a couple of really good lines. And you gave Marc Maron a part. that's a big, like, altruistic move.
He and I had the first time I went on his podcast, we really threw down. He really hated me.
Really?
He hated me for a long time.
Dude, he hated me for a long time,
did
too.
Did he really?
Yeah, he's crazy. Hates everybody. I think he hates himself.
But then we...
tries to be a nice guy, though.
No. Well, he's been really nice to me in the last
couple
years.
Well, that's a nice tactic that people do. Yeah, they create conflict, and then somehow the conflict gets resolved, and then there's like this emotional connection because you have something at stake.
I think he's a little bit addicted to conflict.
A little bit.
What did he not like about you?
Oh, we didn't know each other. He just had this distorted perception of me. He has this issue with people selling out. He had this issue with me doing Fear Factor. I'm like, shut your fucking punk rock nonsense up. Selling out, just please.
No, but he's great in the movie, and Lauren Ambrose and Carol Kane, and
Mark's a good guy. He's just crazy.
Yeah,
but that's why he's good at what he does.
He's good at what he does. Yeah,
he's very good at interviewing people.
Yes,
and he's not. Some people just can't quite get the spark going, it's awkward interviews, like when someone's asking like half-hearted questions or doesn't have the passion for it.
Yeah,
it's very uncomfortable to listen to.
Yes, that's most interviews.
Yeah, isn't it?
Yeah,
like that's why those press junket has to be maddening for you.
Yeah,
especially for a stand-up when you're so con, like always aware of people's attention spans.
Well, you and I were talking the other day about, they want me to do all these like local morning TV shows.
Ugh.
And it's hard because they don't, when you say on those local morning TV shows, when you say a joke, they'll say, I don't know what you mean. and that's the worst. That's the opposite of laughter. The moment you have to start explaining a joke, you're done.
Yeah. I was saying that if you're on one of those shows, any comedian should do this. If you're on one of those shows, what you should do is just immediately break into a Tracy Morgan impression. Someone's getting pregnant around here. And just start rubbing your belly, because that's like the funniest thing that's ever happened on one of those morning shows.
Yeah.
Is Tracy Morgan rubbing his belly. This is my main call.
Oh,
you see, it's my main call. Someone getting pregnant.
Oh,
and when he did that, this poor fool on this silly show was just flabbergasted. Hey, Tracy!
Yeah.
He didn't know what to say. Just like stuck with a wild man on a show.
Yeah.
Someone getting pregnant. He would slap his belly, go, this is my mating call.
So did you write a book first? Is that how this movie came out?
It was a one-man show.
It was a one-man show.
It was off-Broadway in New York, Sleepwalk With Me, the one-man show. And then I adapted it into a film. And then along the way, I wrote a book that was Sleepwalk With Me. It was a chapter in the book. Sleepwalk With Me and Other Painfully True Stories. It was just
comedic essays about sort of painful.
So the sleepwalking part is true?
Yeah, I jumped through a second story window in my sleep.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Holy shit, dude.
Yeah.
So you wake up when? When you hit the ground?
I woke up as I was running on the front lawn in my underwear bleeding.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Second story window. Yeah. That's like some...
At La Quinta Inn in Walla Walla, Washington.
Really holy shit. So you on the road?
I was on the road, yeah.
Oh my God. Dude, how crazy are you on a 1 to 10? What's going on here?
What's going on is I was diagnosed with what's called REM behavior disorder. But on a scale of 1 to 10, 8.
Every comic's crazy. Why are we all so crazy?
I don't know.
Damn.
There's something up with comedians.
So do you have like a tool now that you travel with, like a belt that's like hooked up to like a...
No joke. I sleep every night in a sleeping bag up to my neck. And for a while, I would wear mittens so I couldn't open the sleeping bag.
Oh.
And I take medication. I take an anti-anxiety that the doctor prescribed.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so strange. Is there a trigger? Is there something that...
Anxiety, stress, sleep deprivation, like all the stuff that's really not good sleep hygiene.
Wow. And it makes you just completely not know what you're doing.
Dreams. It makes me act out my dreams. And usually my dreams have to do with me running away from some kind of like demon or wild animal.
Wow. What the fuck, man?
Yeah.
Holy shit. That's got to be crazy.
I know.
I told a story about, I've told this on stage before, about being in San Francisco during a fire. And it was 4:30 in the morning. We all got evacuated from the hotel room, and a lot of people sleep with Ambien. And when they're woken up like that, they don't know what the fuck is going on.
Yes,
and you could see it in their face, and they would wake up in the middle of like walking down the stairs. So this guy was like in front of us, and he was in the middle, and there's a fucking whole line of people trying to get out of this hotel, right? Hundreds of people on the stairs.
Yeah,
and it's a really narrow staircase.
Yeah,
only one person gets it at
the
time.
I know those staircases well.
Well, people were waking up. Like, where are we doing? What are we doing?
Oh my
What's
God.
Going on? Like waking Jeez. Up in the middle of walking down the stairs, and the wife was like yelling at the guy. Just keep walking. Oh. The hotel's the hotel. What hotel?
Oh,
where
God.
Are we? Jeez. We're in San Francisco. The hotel's on fire. We're on fire? Like
oh,
literally
wow.
didn't know what the fuck was going on.
Jeez.
Just whacked out on Ambien. Kevin James made a turkey when he was on Ambien.
Really?
Yeah, he made a turkey.
No kidding.
Made a fucking turkey. Didn't know about it. Got up in the morning. Was like, what the fuck is all this? Like, didn't know that
wow.
he went and he cooked some food.
That is
crazy.
It happens
That's
to people
so
all the time.
My sister growing up, when she was like 11 or 12, my mom found her walking down the street of our neighborhood naked.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like thinking, oh, what are the odds that maybe just some guy drove by and was like, what, a naked 11-year-old walking on the street? My lucky day.
There was a guy who was convicted of – he murdered someone close to him, like his parents or his mother-in-law or something like that. Drove
yeah, no,
to their
it's,
house
it's been,
in his sleep. Do you know this case?
There's cases where it's been used as an alibi.
But this guy got off.
Yeah, no, people have gotten off.
He killed her with like a crowbar.
So I'm going to start sleepwalking,
quote
unquote.
You can't talk about it first on a podcast, dude.
Yeah, that's a paper trail right there.
Jeez, fucked up.
Yeah, how could you get away with that in a court of law? What would since you have it, what would they say? Like, what is
if I killed somebody?
No, anything you do. Like, obviously, when you walked out that window,
there's
no question that you were dreaming.
I had a dream that there was a guided missile headed towards my hotel room, and that there were all these military personnel in the room with me. And they said the military personnel said to me, the missile coordinates are set specifically on you. So I jumped out my window so as to detonate outside the window for the sake of the platoon.
Wow.
That's oh, my
insane.
God.
Jesus. Yeah.
Yeah, this guy beat his mother-in-law to death and choked his father-in-law into unconsciousness. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
When was the last episode that you had that was even just a slight problem?
Well, you know what's crazy is that making a film is actually not the healthiest thing for sleep disorder. So like,
oh, I would imagine.
Because I was having anxiety and sleep deprived, and I was directing. And I was directing myself, acting out things that I had done in my life. So I had an episode where I was sleepwalking. My wife came in, and I was adjusting lamps in the bedroom. She's like, what are you doing? And I was like, we're shooting. And she was like, no, we're not shooting. And I go, I'm sorry, but we are. Like, I was actually patronizing her, which is the worst thing you can do when you're sleepwalking, is just insult people for not understanding your reality. Like, oh, you're so stupid. You don't get it. You just don't get it.
Oh, my God. That's got to be so weird. Has anybody ever videotaped you doing it?
No, no, but I have this.
That would have been the great wacky credits for your movie.
I have this great, yeah. Well, no, in the credits of the movie are the actual photographs of the window I jumped through and me at the hospital. I took photos of all of it because when it happened, I knew no one's going to believe this. This is too crazy. And so that's the credits of the movie.
You smashed the window and everything? Like, you did it like James Bond style?
I jumped through the window like the Hulk.
Oh, my God.
And I say that because that's how I described it at the emergency room. I was like, you know the Hulk? You know, he just kind of jumps through windows and walls? That's like me.
Holy shit,
and,
dude.
No, I've never videoed myself, but I have this great new video technology called my wife, who remembers everything I see, whatever I do or say. So she's kind of explained to me what it looks
she's
like.
She's your dictator. She dictates.
It's kind of a hacky men-woman thing, but my wife remembers everything. Everything.
That's funny.
Your ride's here, by the way.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Is it? Right. Well, dude, thank you very much. This is a story that we were talking about, if anybody's interested in looking up. There was a guy from Toronto, and he had he lost his job due to embezzlement, and he suffered from a gambling addiction. So the guy was in some serious debt. So because of that, he had a high level of stress and sleep-induced insomnia. And he got up in his car, rose from his bed. He drove 14 miles to the home of his wife's parents.
That's unreal.
Yeah. He removed a tire iron from the car.
You gotta be
entered the house,
me.
And he beat the mother-in-law to death, choked the father-in-law unconsciousness, and then he used a knife from the kitchen to stab them.
I don't buy that, though.
Yeah.
I don't buy that as an alibi.
He seems like a cunt anyway. You know,
he turned
himself into a police station.
I don't buy that. Because, I have this disorder, and I could not imagine doing anything that, like, basically the reason I wear a sleeping bag is that if you undo the sleeping bag, the moment you start doing something that requires dexterity and focus and concentration, that's what wakes you up.
Yeah, I would imagine.
I feel like driving a car is a very specific.
Dude, they should have called you.
They should have called you in the courtroom.
Yeah. Where am I in that story?
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure this guy got off.
Yeah.
I think he got acquitted, man.
And then the
jury acquitted Parks of murder and later of attempted murder, although the government appealed the 1992 Supreme Court of Canada. See, it's Canada, though. That's the problem. They're too nice up there. America would be like, what the fuck are you talking about? Oh, you're sleepwalking when you beat someone to death with a tire iron? Yeah, nothing wakes you up like metal to bone. Crack over and over again in your hands, vibrating in your hands. Your mother-in-law's skull. Really? And that doesn't wake you up? Get the fuck out of here, you crazy asshole.
Jesus.
Right, Mike Birbiglia? Dude, your movie looks fucking awesome.
Thanks.
It really looks cool. Really funny.
It's in, if people want to find it, it's in 30 cities in theaters this weekend.
And will it be available on Netflix and iTunes and all that stuff?
Soon it will be available all these places. But right now it's booked. If you go on sleepwalkmovie.com, you can see in the next month it's going to open in 170 movie theaters around the country.
Listen, if you ever want to come back in, we'd love to have you. Anytime you want.
This is really
Whenever
fun.
You're in town, just... Anytime, just let me know. And if you need help promoting anything, let me know as well, and we'll hook it up.
Thanks a lot.
So thank you very much for coming on. Thanks to Onnit.com for sponsoring our podcast. Use the code name Rogan and save yourself 10% off any and all supplements. Sorry, you dirty bitches. And we will see you guys Friday. We're probably going to do an Ice House Chronicles here because it's going to be Joey Diaz, Ari Shaffir, me, and Doug Stanhope as well.
Oh, nice.
At the Ice House.
What? Doug's coming?
Yeah, Doug's
coming. Are you fucking
kidding
me?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Doug's going to be here Friday. And, of course, Doug and I are also still doing the End of the World show December 21st, 2012
nice.
At the Wiltern Theater in L.A. with
Joey
awesome. Diaz. And Honey, the band.
Tell
that's,
Doug I said hi.
I will, for sure.
He's the best.
Yeah, I love him.
Oh,
so,
please buy a t-shirt.
Yeah, we're doing something for Tosh.0 on Friday, so after that he's going to come down and do the shows at the Ice House. So that's Friday and Saturday. Next weekend, I'm in Santa Barbara at the Lobero Theater. I don't even know what that's like, but Santa Barbara's pretty badass, so I can't wait to... All that shit's on my Twitter page. Go to my Twitter page. Go to Birbiglia's Twitter page. Birbiglia, goddammit.
At Birbigs.
Birbigs. Birbigs. And Redban is R-E-D-B-A-N on Twitter. And DeathSquad.tv if you want to buy the new DeathSquad t-shirt. Yeah. That is like... it's like a ripoff of a bunch of big companies that are probably going to wind up suing him, and he'll have to take it down. So get in on it now while it's still a collector's item.
That's right.
All right, you freaks. We will see you Friday. Thanks to everybody. We don't have any more podcasts this week, do we? Is this it?
Ice House.
Ice House, right. Okay. So we'll see you guys Friday on the Ice House Chronicles. And then next week, I got a bunch of people next week. A bunch of good shit's happening. I'll keep you guys in tune. Thank you, everybody, for all the positive messages on Twitter and Facebook and all that good shit and all the cool people that come out to the comedy stores. And comedy stores, shows, places. I should stop talking at a certain point in time. I've said too many words. They're meaningless now. It's all just noise out of my mouth. You know what the fuck I'm talking about, people. We love you guys. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
See you soon. Bye-bye.